Gay Mormon Stories is a production of Mormon Stories and the Open Stories Foundation. To support this podcast, please donate today at GayMormonStories.org. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer Mormons. And thanks for listening.
When you had this experience where you really had a spiritual experience and it really gave you a lot of reason to accept yourself and your reality, which is that of being a gay man, did that help you to start exploring in the gay community or start getting involved or start dating? When did that come in this timeline?
Yeah, it was right then that I started dating. Just started to be okay with getting out there and starting to meet new people.
Okay. I'm guessing that gave you sort of a community to replace the Mormon community in a way. I mean, this is also common that when people sort of feel extruded or leave their religious community, especially gay people, sometimes they turn to the gay community. Did that turn out to be the case for you?
Yeah, I found a lot of support. I actually have really incredible friends that I've been very happy with. Some I met right when I first started making friends that I've just lasted throughout. Or when I first started making gay friends that I've just lasted. And some are more recent. But really, I try to only keep the ones that I know are going to be positive in my life around me.
And tell me if you've had sort of some encounters with the more darker side of the gay nightlife or the gay scene of you. Have you had some negative experiences out there in the gay community?
Yeah, I mean, I've had some negative experiences, but I don't know that my experiences are vastly different from what a straight person might experience. I think it's just inside of the church, everything is just so sheltered and it's a big bubble that you don't really experience a lot of reality, as in, like, I mean, because nobody drinks and nobody goes out to bars, and so you get a different sense of things when you start doing that. But
I mean, I always say the trouble with Mormons who leave Mormonism is that they can't distinguish the difference between taking a hit of marijuana or shooting up heroin, and that's problematic if you're not catching that one is very different than the other, right?
yes, they definitely are. I haven't had any. I mean, I've experienced people who get into some of those drugs, but I haven't had experience myself.
Okay, have you participated somewhat in the student organizations related to LGBT, either in your undergrad or in your medical school?
In undergrad, no, I really wasn't very involved. As far as my undergrad, I did school and I got out, and that was about it. I did it as fast as I could so I could be done as soon as possible. I was not a huge fan of college life. I really didn't party. I mean, I graduated I graduated like a week after I turned 21. So.
Oh yeah, that was really fast.
So there wasn't a whole lot to do. But in med school, my first year, I was the vice president of the Gay Straight Alliance, and my second year, I was the president. I've got involved when I, like, just in med school.
Yeah. And would you say that your medical school has been a supportive environment for a gay person?
Oh yeah, the faculty is very supportive. As far as the student body, it's incredibly, there's a lot of conservative, I mean, there's a lot of Mormons at my school, to be honest. Uh-huh. And the student body is fairly conservative, but for the most part, I haven't met any opposition. I mean, even like gay friends in my med school were always very supportive. I would have some would sign up for, like, during club week, they signed up for the Gay Straight Alliance. Some would come to meetings. I mean, very supportive.
Would you say that you've hung on to some of your old Mormon friends from the days where you were more active?
I would say they're still friends, not ones that I see often. but I still talk to them, and I still see some of them every once in a while, and we hang out and have a good time.
And would this be a good time to sort of talk about how the journey has been with your family then, since ever since you've kind of come to this place of self-acceptance? Would you be able to share with us how that journey has been for your different family members?
Oh, yeah. Like, I always joke, because I say that I've come out several times. I mean, like I said, I first told my mom when I was 14, and it was a phase. And then again, when I was around 15 or 16, told my dad. It was during a PPI, a personal priesthood interview, that he just asked all the right questions, so I just told him. And then, I mean, again, because then it was okay because I was gay but not acting on it. And then again, when I acted on it, it became a different story, and that's when I did therapy. And then I came out to my brother. I asked my dad if he would tell my brother. I didn't want it. I was too embarrassed to talk to him about it. But he was actually, he was really laid back, very supportive. He's just, my brother is the type of person that truly is just one of the least judgmental people that I know. And he is very devout in his religious belief. But he is just so laid back that I never feel like I'm judged by him. And I really look up to him as a person. He's kind of, he's one person that I look up to as far as what a man, like what it truly means to be a man. And I don't mean that in the sense of masculine or feminine. I just mean like as far as being a husband and a father and being a person, a human.
So his acceptance was important to you, obviously because he's your brother, but also because he is, to you, is such a role model in other ways, because he's, you're seeing him as being a great person in many ways.
Yes. And at the time he was still living at home. He hadn't gotten married yet. I mean, he had been back from his mission for a couple of years. But yeah, it was a big deal. And he actually went with me on one of the therapy outings. It was a camping outing, and we were, each of the same sex attracted people were supposed to bring an opposite sex attracted a role model with them. And I took my brother.
Oh, okay.
So he actually went on that with me, and, so he's kind of been a part on the journey as well. He was the first sibling that, I came out to. My sisters, I came out to, we had a family meeting, and I came out to them, and they were supportive and loving. It was that, oh, you're trying to work on it, so it's okay, kind of thing. But we've definitely come a long way from all of that, because then, after I quit therapy, I had to come out to them all again, and that was on Thanksgiving. We were all together, and I pulled them all together and had a family meeting, and I sat them down and I said, you know, up until now, you've been supportive of me being gay because I wasn't going to act on it. And I said, my intention now has changed, and I intend to act on it. And I'm going to live my life as a gay person. I mean, that I want to I intend to find somebody. And so, I told them I quit going to therapy because I was not going to force myself to be with a woman when it felt so unnatural. And I said, you know, the only way that I would ever be with a woman is if I was naturally attracted to her, because it just wouldn't be fair to any woman, any daughter of God, would not be fair to do that to her. And so I said, I don't see that happening. So I'm telling you that I'm going to start dating men. And they said, I mean, it was different. My parents and my oldest sister kind of said the same thing. They said, we love you and we support you and we'll always love you, but any partner of yours, we won't be able to accept or have around the family. And that was at that time. I was 20. That was when I was 20 at that time. And my brother just said, my dad said, does anybody else want to have any questions or anything? And he said, Jake, you've been quiet. And he said, do you have any questions? And my brother said, are you happy? And I said, yeah, I am. I said, this is what I want. And he said, okay. And then he just was quiet after that. And then years down the road, I dated somebody for quite a while and I told them about it and they weren't very happy with it. And it was still that kind of, you're welcome and you're accepted, but no partner of yours is. And then over time, things have just progressed to the point where they've become supportive and they've told me, you know what, like, they've seen things change. My oldest sister has told me that she wished things didn't have to be the way that they are, just with the church's stance and with the treatment of gay people. And she's become very supportive. My father told me that he loves me and he wants me in his life no matter what. And any person that I love will be, he will treat just like any of his other children-in-law. And any kids that I have will be his grandchildren. And he said that he wants them in his life. And so that was huge for me. And then my sister, the one who went on a mission, she's the one that's closest to me in age. She had a little bit of an issue with it at first. And when I told her, I said, you know, it just, I'm not going to give you an ultimatum. I know I said I've done that in the past with you and I don't feel that way. I said, I love you all and I want you in my life. But I want you to know when I come around the family and you're all talking about your families and, or with you who you're dating and everybody is talking about each other's personal lives. And when it comes to me, the questions are how's school or, great weather we're having or whatever. And I said, I feel terrible when I sit around and watch you be so supportive of each other in your personal lives, but nobody will talk to me about mine. And so I said, I can deal with that because I love you guys and I want to be around you. But I said, as long as I have a partner, I will not allow you guys to make my partner feel like less of a person. And so if I have a partner and you can't accept him, then I won't be a part of your lives anymore. I said, you don't have to choose my way. But I said, if you don't, then you'll never see me again as long as I have a partner. And she changed within an instant, and she said, well, are you dating anybody? And at that point, she's become, I mean, she and I have become incredibly close friends. We were back when I was in high school, and we've become very close friends again, and she calls me at least once a week to talk about any new dates that I've been on, and we talk about boys, and we give each other advice with guys that we're seeing, or with maybe how to meet new guys, things like that. And I'll text her, and I'll say, oh, I'm having this boy trouble, what should I do? And she'll give me her advice, and she'll ask for mine in return. So, I mean, I'd say my family, we've come a really long way.
So really, everyone has gotten to the point where they've expressed to you that they would accept you and your partner as being really fully part of their lives.
Yes.
And it took a while. I mean, they had to see, they really had to understand the unfairness and the mistreatment that you'd been through. I guess it took them a while to see that. When they really saw it, it sounds like they were open to being aware of it.
Yeah, and actually one thing that really kind of changed my dad, which I was surprised because I guess I didn't realize it needed to be said, but in talking to him, I just said, Dad, this was a while ago before, like kind of around the time he started to see things a little differently. I said, Dad, you know that I am no different than you. I said, what I want is no different than what you want. He said, I want a spouse like you have mom. I want children like you have us. I want to have a family that I raise with good virtue and with great values and have a family that I love and can cherish just like you do. And there's really no difference other than the person that I will love will be the same sex as me. And he said, no, actually, I didn't realize that. And he said, you might want to tell the rest of the family because I don't think any of them see it that way either. And so I was surprised. I didn't realize that that needed to be said, but for whatever reason, they didn't see things that way.
Yeah. I mean, it seems so obvious to us, but it's hard to hard to imagine.
I think that's common, being raised in the church or really in any religious institution. It's often the misconception that somebody that strays away from it is going to live a life of promiscuity and not going to have these good values that they were raised with. And I mean, but they raised me right. They raised me well, and I haven't strayed from that.
Yeah, well, that kind of brings me to our next, what I'd like to ask you is about, you know, what's happened with your value system. But let me just finish up a little bit more about your family. You know, so both your parents have been political. Your mother was even involved in these fairly anti-gay causes.
Yeah.
And so has her perspective on that changed? Has she stopped supporting that stuff?
Oh, yeah, and she's told me that she stopped because of me. So she doesn't support it anymore. It was after 2006, after that, because they had an amendment to the Constitution to ban gay marriage in 2006, which failed. And after that, she quit being a part of the organization. And because that was around the time that it was after that I really kind of came out and was living and dating men and that kind of idea. So she left the organization around that time.
Uh-huh. And of course your father, I mean, this is how I became aware of you, was that your father sort of publicly stated that he couldn't support gay marriage. And I know, you know, you had a chance to explain on with Anderson Cooper, which was, you did an amazing interview with Anderson Cooper, and I
thank
really
you.
Urge my audience to watch that. I'm actually going to post it, if I have your permission, post it with this podcast.
Oh yeah, I'd post the one that's the entire video. Most of the ones on YouTube are only half of it, but the real one's like 8.5 minutes long.
Okay, yeah, I'll make sure I post that one. But you know, that came about because Portman had come out in support of gay marriage, and there's very few Republicans who have done that, and he specifically did because of his son. And so, you know, I guess everyone's interested in how you see that, because I hear you telling me your father is actually supportive of you, and even of you being in a partnership, and even of, you know, considering any children you might have, however you might have them, as being his grandchildren. So how do you see that? How do you see that being more of, you know, I'm just thinking out loud, is he really just reflecting what he needs to represent his constituency?
Well, I can't say for his belief only he can, or his opinion, or how he'll vote only he can. But I can tell you that he does have the most conservative constituency in one of the most conservative states.
Okay.
So I think that does have a big part of it.
Yeah, I mean, a politician has obligation to his constituency.
I mean, he's a representative. That is what his title is.
Yeah, so I can, you know, I'm hoping that everyone will vote for gay marriage, but I do understand someone who is representing his constituency has a substantial obligation to actually do what the constituency would want them to do.
Yes.
Although there have been some exceptions throughout history that have made an importance in history, so. Anyway, hopefully the Supreme Court will take away any need for anyone to vote on that anymore. But that's to be...
Yeah, and I mean, I guess I rationalize it by the fact that Congress will never touch gay marriage anyway, so...
Yeah, not in the foreseeable future. Well, although there's a lot of people saying the Republicans would just as soon see the issue go away. And the best way for it to go away, of course, is the Supreme Court to make it go away. But,
oh, yeah, because it's hurting them.
Yeah. Okay, well, like I say, we don't need to get too much into your discussion of your father's ideas, but it's interesting, and I think important, at least for your personal journey, that he has chosen in a very personal way to embrace you, and so I think that's important for people to be aware of, I guess.
Yeah.
Certainly for your story.
Well, I think for him, he's told me that he realized that the only way he could consider himself to be the only way that he saw to live as Christ-like as he could was to accept and support me, because he realized if he considered it, I mean, Jesus Christ spent time with some people that according to standards, were living immorally, but those are the people he spent most of his time with. I mean, he supported them and he loved them, and their actions didn't change the way he viewed them. And so I think for him, he kind of just realized, you know, whether I agree with it or not has no relevance here, but I love him, and so I will support him and do everything I can to be a part of his life and to be with him.
Yeah. Well, that's really what I really would hope that all Mormon parents would do, is see that message in the gospel.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, it's hard to arrive at that message because everyone, the gay people and their families, are just instilled with these prejudices that really need to be worked around and really impede us from seeing how the gospel should be lived and how the gospel should be embraced.
I mean, it baffles me the way that some families treat their children.
Well, you had a big struggle, and I'm guessing that your struggle would have been infinitely worse if your parents maybe weren't giving you the best message about your sexual orientation, but it sounds like they were certainly clearly loving you all along the path.
Yeah.
And so that probably mitigated the damage that you probably would have had personally.
They did well with what they had. What they've seen as my best interest has always been what they've tried to do for me.
Yeah.
And I guess often other parents see that as the same, but I'm just glad that my parents saw loving me as in my best interest rather than playing the hard card.
Right, the tough love.
Yeah. Which isn't, I wouldn't say, is really love.
Well, it's really tragic what the stories we hear and the statistics we hear about how many LGBT kids are on the streets in Utah and how the suicide rate is so astronomically high. But even when we hear your story, we see good intention parents who probably could have done better if they'd had the right information. And so I'm constantly plugging the Family Acceptance Project. I don't know if you've had a chance to read the brochure, but you're certainly going to get to as you become an adolescent psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a great resource about how parents can actually maintain their Mormon values and live the church teachings, but also minimize the damage or the harm that comes to young gay people who grow up in the Mormon community.
Yeah.
So it's, I hope everyone will read that brochure and spread it far and wide, the Family Acceptance Project brochure, which is called Supportive Families, Healthy Children. And there's also a film that is going around the film festivals right now that is of a Mormon family that I'm acquainted with, the Montgomerys, and they're an amazing family, and it shows their journey and how using this information really, really helped them in their journey with their gay sons. So
yeah,
that's my plug. But meanwhile, I'd like to talk to you then about, you mentioned that you really do feel strongly about keeping the values that you always had, even if you left Mormonism and even if you resigned your membership.
Mm-hmm.
Would you mind talking to that a little bit about what it is, the value system you have, and also do you feel like you have a spiritual path as well, that now that you've been outside of Mormonism?
Yeah, I mean, I was raised with all of the traditional Mormon values of families, spending time together. I mean, being raised with good morals and trying to do everything that we can to really stay as a cohesive unit. I mean, my family it was hard for us to really do like family and home evening, but like I said, every morning we would do scripture study over the speakerphone since my dad was, in DC while we were in Mesa. And so we really got to spend a lot of time together. We would talk about the day before, but, on the phone with him before we do scripture study. And, it was hard getting up as early as we had to in order to do it, but we managed, and I think we were all stronger for it, but we spent a lot of time just chatting and we would get to know each other. And Sundays were a day that we spent together and at home. I mean, those are the kinds of things that I believe in raising a family with, are good family values, where we teach the kids that, the importance of having a strong family and having good relationships and spending time together. I mean, I've gotten to the point where, I used to not be a big fan of Sundays because they always had church, but now I've realized the importance of having those days where you just get to spend time as a family together. And I look forward to the time when I can do that with my own family. I mean, even now, we still get together at least every other Sunday as a family, and we eat together, and we joke together, and have fun together, and hang out at my parents' house together every other Sunday. I think for me, that's one of the biggest. I mean, it's just real family time.
And it sounds like you're incredibly close to your family.
Yeah, we are very close. I went shopping with my sisters last night. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, and what about your spiritual path?
Oh, my spirituality. I mean, like I said, when I got the answer about that it was okay that I was gay, it was this incredible love that came over me, and this kind of just love for myself that I hadn't felt ever. And it's kind of taken me a while to piece together what I believe, but it's come down to the fact that I believe that there is a universal power. I don't know. I think that's what people call God. And I can't say that it's a person or that it's a being or that it's not. I think to claim knowledge in a being is just as dangerous as to claim that there isn't one. I don't think a person can know either way, and so I would never say that I know, but I'm open to it. I'm open to whatever the possibility may be. But for me, what I believe is our universal, our unifying power is love. And I think that the Bible is one of the most beautiful allegories that we can have for that. I think that where God in the Bible begat Jesus Christ, I think Jesus Christ is a symbol of forgiveness, and the only way we can truly forgive people is if we have love in our hearts. And I think it is love that causes us to do the things that we do. It's our moral high ground. I mean, it keeps us from harming one another. And I mean, if you look at the commandments, they all stem from this idea of love.
Do you see yourself missing or desiring to be part of a religious community? Or
not at all. I am religioned out after 20 years. I have no issue with attending here and there, but as far as organized religion goes, I try to stay away from it. I don't know. I'm not a fan of groups that will say, I know they all don't. They all don't. Some of the non-denominational ones don't, but I'm not a fan of a group saying that they have the path to happiness and whatever it may be, because I think that the only path to happiness is the one that you find on your own. And so I think that my religion is one that I've found on my own, and it's the only, and I practice it, not anybody else.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your career aspirations. I'm particularly interested in this, and you've told me a little bit about it, but I'd like maybe if you could tell your audience what you're planning on doing. You're in medical school, you're in your fourth year. That means you're about to embark on making the decision of your career path, your residency. So what do you
think in life? My plan is to do residency in psychiatry with a fellowship in child and adolescent medicine. Child and adolescent psych. Yes.
That's what I did. So I wholeheartedly approve. I approve because it's been such a great career for me, and it's gives so many great options. So
yeah, and there's just such a big need.
And there's a big need. There's a big shortage. What's drawing you to the adolescents then? The adolescents in psychiatry.
I've always had a passion for youth. I mean, and especially with being growing up and having such a struggle through my youth, I just really feel for them. I really connect with what they go through. And so, it's always been my passion to do everything I could to help them. I mean, I joke sometimes and say what I would like to do with the rest of my life is to go fix the kids that reparative therapy messes up.
Yeah.
So, I just want to help kids. And I've realized in working that though I love medicine, I'm not a big fan of working with adults. I feel like kids are a lot tougher than adults.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I like the kids.
Well, that's really great because there's certainly a big need. And if you are able to develop a rapport, that's certainly a skill. So that's exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing you succeed at that. And so you'll have to keep me informed on how that goes.
Well, give me about 5 or 6 years.
Well, you got to finish your residency, but
yeah.
And, you know, just getting back to your Mormonism and the values you retained, just in reflecting on your whole experience, you know, you really went through a super tough time, but you had certain lifelines, it sounds like, such as your, you know, in a way the church was hard, but in a way it was, at least socially, it was a refuge for you.
Yeah.
In a way your family made things tough for you, but in a way the family was always there for you at the same time and was always showing you love.
Oh yeah, well my dad is one of the, I mean, he's one that really kind of helped get me through things. I mean, where things were tough and I was dealing with issues with leadership. I mean, like I said, stake president breached my confidentiality. I mean, I was 18, I was an adult, but for some reason I couldn't repent on my own. He had to bring my parents into it, or, I mean, I had a lot of distrust for leadership and I really just didn't have faith in them. Got to the point where I just would never sustain my leaders just because I didn't believe that they were actually called of God. But in talking to my father, I mean, he made it clear. He said, you know what? Like, I get that you have an issue. And he said, I want you to know, though we might be told they're called of God, that really doesn't mean they're not men. And they said they are men and they have their own bias. They're subject to those bias and they will act accordingly. And he said, God's not always going to step in when they're wrong. And so we just have to take what they say, with a grain of salt. And if we pray about it and feel that it's right for us, then that's what we do. But he said, really, you were raised and taught that you are entitled to direct revelation from God. And so you need to use that as your first lifeline and listen to what he's telling you and listen to your own heart and figure out what is right for you according to what he reveals in your life. It might not always be in accordance with what one of your leaders is saying.
Okay, so that's amazing. And that's what you did. So your father really taught you the most essential thing you needed to know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I remember we were always taught, you know, you're entitled to direct revelation and everything like that, but no one ever put it in such succinct terms and helped me to realize that, yeah, I mean, I'm just as much a child of God as any leader that I have. I don't know why we put them on such a pedestal when really I am the first connection that I should be focused on and worried about. Worried about my relationship with God rather than my relationship with my leaders.
Yeah. What are the elements you would wish you could go back and change? Or would you just say you're glad it all happened, even though they were hard experiences?
I thought a lot about this actually. When I look back, there's not really anything that I would change. It's all rough. And there are things that maybe I look back and I think, you know, if it were to happen again today, I probably make a different decision today, but I'm not upset that I wouldn't change the decision I made back then. And really, my philosophy is that the man that I am today is the summation of every choice that I've made leading up till now. And tomorrow I'll be a different man because I've made choices today that will add to this man that I've become. So I am ever changing, but I am happy and the man that I am, and I love the man that I am. And so there's no reason for me to change any of those things, because any change that I can make to life or how it was would change the person that I am. And there's no sense in doing that when I'm so happy.
Yeah. Well, I think we have something in common is because I feel the same way, but I also feel bad for the people who didn't come out of it well. And that's why I want to see a different world for the young people behind us. And
yeah,
and I really admire that you're really going to dedicate your career to helping young people so that they, hopefully, less of them will have to suffer these same things that you were sort of forced to go through. Even though I don't regret what happened to me for my journey, and you're not regretting what happened to you on the one hand. And on the other hand, I don't want kids. I want them to have a new and different challenges. And
I agree.
Have to go through these ones, yeah.
I wouldn't wish a lot of the things I've been through on anybody. but I wouldn't change the fact that they had happened to me. I would love to see things be different for future generations so that they don't have to suffer like I did, or like the hundreds or thousands, however many there are, that have suffered before them. I think that we can make things a lot easier, but I'm just happy with who I am now.
Well, then sort of as a, to get towards tying things up, I want to ask you, you know, you've given me a hint of what you envision your future, but do you want to talk about that a little bit more? Just what your hopes are for love and life? And
yeah. Well, I mean, I'm single now, so I don't have anything coming up in the near future, but I know that I would love to find somebody that I can share my life with. Someone that I just connect with. Someone that, you know, it just feels like, even though I know I'm a whole person now, I feel like it's just a great supplement to my life. And when that happens, I intend to marry that person. My thought is, and my hope, that Arizona will have marriage, but even if Arizona doesn't, I intend to get married, and I intend to have a huge ceremony. Well, maybe not. It doesn't have to be huge, but it'll be important to me. So I think it'd be fun if it was huge, because I just want to, if they don't have marriage by that point, we're just going to rub it in their face. So, no.
As you should.
Yes.
As you should.
I joke. Like, if we don't have marriage, I'll just do it on the Capitals, Phoenix Capitals. No, I intend to get married. I want it to be, I would love for it to be here in Arizona, but if it's not legal, I'll get married. I'll get my license elsewhere. I'll have the legal ceremony take place wherever I can. And then I intend to do a big ceremony in Arizona.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, and I would love to have children. And
you see that as a possibility?
Oh, I do. I'm very interested in both adoption and having biological. But, I mean, whatever way is going, I'm not opposed to either one or both. Yeah. I mean, I want to adopt, for sure, at least one child, just because I feel strongly about adoption and giving kids a chance to have something healthy and something good. And so my thought's always been to adopt one of the children who's older, who has kind of run out of options for adoption. And I would love to have a biological child, almost more than it, just to satisfy curiosity of what it would be like, and just to raise a kid and to be able to go through that. And I mean, it's like war stories when you sit around and talk with other parents who have raised children from infancy. So I mean, that's a hope of mine, but, I definitely intend to have children with the person that I marry, the man that I marry, and raise them, and they'll be close with their cousins and have all sorts of family things. And then, I mean, friends of mine who have become like brothers or sisters, just be able to share that time with them. And
well, that's a great vision. And that's also one beautiful thing that's emerged in the past couple of decades, is we're seeing that as really being a possibility. We see more and more gay couples who are making that happen.
Yeah.
So it's really making us aware that it's not that unrealistic of a aspiration.
It's definitely an option, and that it didn't really be. So I'm definitely happy about that.
Yeah. Well, then, is there anything that we've missed that would be important to hear about you?
We didn't talk about my resignation. You said you wanted to talk about that.
Oh, good point. Yeah, you said that there was sort of a story around that. So,
like I had said about, I became inactive around the time that Prop 8 happened, and I started more doing research and figuring out what I truly believed. And kind of letting the beliefs, the questions I had about the church were kind of resurface and kind of figure more things out, you know, like with polygamy and women's rights and blacks in the priesthood and all of that. And really kind of just figuring out the history and piecing it all together, reading Joseph Smith's old journals or the discourses from Brigham Young. Incredibly interesting read, by the way, for anybody that hasn't read them. And
that would be hard work for me to struggle through those. So
well, if you, I mean, I haven't read all of them, but definitely have read, just gone through and read different bits. I mean, you can find something terrible in almost any section of that book. So,
okay.
Just kind of looking at that. And I thought, you know, is this something that I really believe? And I thought, you know, well, no, I never really felt the strong, anything really telling me I wanted to believe more than anything. And just realized that it wasn't something that I wanted to be a part of, and decided one day that I would resign. And so I wrote up a letter detailing my desires to resign from the church and why I was doing so. And I got an appointment with the bishop. And this bishop I had never talked to. I think I met him once, but had never chatted with him about anything. Just introduce myself when he was first called as bishop before I became inactive. So I met with him and I sat down and I said, "Bishop, I would like my name removed from the records of the church." And he looked at me and he said, "Is it because you're gay?" And I was kind of surprised because I had never said anything to him about that. I mean, like I told you, I told every bishop that I ever had. This was one that I hadn't because I left the ward, I mean, shortly after he was called. And so I never even bothered to tell him. And he sat across from me and asked me if I wanted to leave because I was gay. And there was no way he would really know that or could jump to that kind of conclusion unless it had been written in my records, which, I mean, I'm sure it was, since I wouldn't be allowed to hold a calling with children or anything like that. But because don't they still do that? I know they did then. Yeah.
Actually, yeah, that's, I mean, it's hard to get hold of that exact policy, but we're certainly... People talk frequently about having their church membership annotated.
So, oh yeah, so I'm sure I had the asterisk on my chart, next to my name or whatever, denoting that I wasn't allowed to be with kids, whatever. So I'm sure he figured that out. So I looked at him and I said, "Well, I would be lying if I said it had nothing to do with it, but I'm leaving the church because I don't believe in it anymore. When really, I mean, the church left me a while ago. I'm just now removing my name from the records." Yeah. And I said, if it was just because I was gay, but I still believed, I would try and stay, hold on, but I don't believe anymore. So I want you to remove my name from the records. And he said, "Well, Matt, I think what we should do here is just put you on probation. That way, when you want to come back, it will be a lot easier for you and you won't have to be rebaptized." And I looked at him and I said, "I don't think you're understanding what I'm saying here." I said, "For being an organization that touts such high family values, you are one organization that tears more families apart than I know. And you stand in the way of me having my own family and in the way of most things that I believe and that I want in my life. So I will no longer add my name in its support. And I want you to do as I've asked and remove my name from the records." And I said, "I won't ever be rebaptized. So why don't you just take care of it?" And so he said, "Okay, well, I need you to write me a letter saying your intention." And I handed him the one that I'd already written. And he said, "Well, you should, within 30 days, you should find out." And I waited 30 days and nothing. So I emailed him and I asked why he hadn't done it. And he said, "Oh, I've just been busy." And I said, "You just have to send a letter to Salt Lake. So can you just do it?" And he said, "Okay, I'll get to it." Another 30 days went by and nothing. And so I emailed Salt Lake and I attached him on it. And I said, "You know, more than 60 days ago, I asked my bishop to take care of this. And he lied to me and he told me that he would and he hasn't done it yet. And I would like you to do this." And I attached the letter that I'd written. And so my bishop brought me back angrily and said, "You didn't have to do this. I told you I'd do it and I will." And I said, "No, I did. Because you told me you would do it twice and you lied both times. So I want it taken care of." And so within 30 days, I was resigned fully. And so they, for all that I heard that they excommunicate right and left, it took a lot for me to get out.
Well, I suppose there's some good about that. But yeah, at that point, it wasn't particularly helpful. It was kind of too little too late.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you've talked about how your family dealing with you being gay. How about your family dealing with you being no longer a believing Mormon? Was that yet another coming out?
Yeah, it kind of was. We really haven't even talked about it that much, though. They know that I've resigned, but it's really doesn't even seem to be that big of an issue for them. I mean, that they've mentioned to me anyway. I'm sure that there's some part of them that are really upset by it, but they've never mentioned it to me. They just kind of took it in stride.
Do you think they probably realize that it's just really, really hard to be gay and be Mormon, and so maybe...
Oh, yeah, my brother...
helps them accept it.
My brother's wife, one day, was just like, you know... And she's kind of just figuring it out, or just kind of thinking through it herself, putting herself in my shoes. She was like, you know what? Like, I've thought about it a lot, and it really bothers me the way the church treats gays. And she's like, because, you know, like, I can totally understand why you left. She said, if the church told me that I couldn't love Jake and I couldn't be with him, I would leave too, because I would think that was ridiculous, because I don't see myself loving anybody else. And I said, yeah, I mean, I'm glad that you get it. I said, I didn't just leave because of that, but I'm glad that you understand that that would be a big part of why. And she said, yeah, she said, it just kind of makes me mad how they treat you guys and the way that things are right now. Yeah, so I think they get it.
Well, that's nice. And it's nice that there's people around you who get it. And I'm hoping that more Mormons will be like your family, and maybe things will be different someday for the next generation.
Yeah, hopefully.
It's not obviously happening really fast, but there are changes coming.
Yeah, I mean, the church has turned against reparative therapy, so that's good. They have committed to no longer being involved in the fight against gay marriage. I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's pretty impressive the changes that they're making. I mean, from growing up in the church and it from the outside, they don't seem like much, but from the inside, they're huge.
Yeah. And just the fact that there's a body of allies. You know, when I was a young adult, there was virtually nobody. I mean,
yeah,
you have these few people like Carolyn Pearson, but just to have sort of a movement within Mormonism, that just didn't exist. So,
yeah, I mean,
it's small now. It used to be not there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, even in the Phoenix Pride Parade, they were marching with their banner that said Mormons for Marriage Equality.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool.
And so even if the church doesn't change, just having a visible group of people like that, even if every ward only has a couple, at least there's a couple there. If they're being vocal, if the teenagers know who they are, it's going to be really heartening to those teenagers. It'll really decrease the isolation.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of optimistic that even if we aren't changing the whole institution right now, that by getting more and more Mormons to understand the issues is really going to benefit the young people who are still coming up in the church.
Yeah, definitely will.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you. Do you have any closing sort of thoughts you'd like to give before we call it quits? Any last words of encouragement or...
I think nothing more than just for young people to realize things aren't always going to be as bad as they seem now. When you look back and you can realize just what you've gone through has done for you. I mean, from what I've gone through, I've developed a greater sense of empathy. And I know it'll come in handy. I mean, we go through this refiner's fire and we come out a better person for it. And the church, I mean, we'll talk about the refiner's fire, but they don't realize that they... For a lot of our gay young people are the greatest and hottest fire that they will ever go through. But you'll come out better for it in the end if you just stick through it.
Yeah. Well, Matt, I'm sure impressed with, you know, the journey you took. And I really am happy that you told me your story. And I think that there's some really important things that everyone's going to learn from you who hears this. And I'm also really, really love to show someone who really came out on top. And, you know, we not everybody does come out on top. There's too many suicides. There's too many lives that get destroyed. But I just am really happy because we need role models. And you had the setback, you know, the mission. But you just ran with that and you got through school fast. You're in medical school. You've got a career in mind. You have an asterisk at church that you can't work with children, but you're going to work with you in a much more important role probably, and you're going to have your kids. And so you've really removed all these things from your life that were impeding you, and you came out on top. And I just hope that inspires people and hope that people realize that they can have everything. I mean, we can no longer say, I can't do it. We can no longer say, well, we can't get married, we can only say I can't have kids. They're doing it, and you're on the road to realizing all those dreams. And so I have to say thank you for sharing that with us, and congratulations on making it happen and for telling us about how it was for you.
Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, well, so that will do it then. I'll say goodbye, and great thanks to Matt Salmon. And watch for his Anderson Cooper interview, which I'm going to post with this. And we'll hear great things from you, I'm sure, Matt.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for joining us today on Gay Mormon Stories. To discuss this episode with others, please check us out at gaymormonstories.org. If you want to see this podcast continue, please consider making a monthly donation, again, at gaymormonstories.org. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer Mormons.
How gentle God's commands, how kind His precepts are. Come cast your burdens on the Lord and trust His constant I'll drop my breath.